So now we shift to another topic. This is the MH Can struggle, the struggle to reopen MH Can in spite of the county and city's refusal so far to really pay much attention to it, to allow people for months to be without the services that they had, just as they essentially have done something similar with the Coral Street Funding Matters complex, which is now focusing simply more narrowly on fundraising, clearing away those troublesome, visually inappropriate folks who are camping and, you know, survival camping in front of their helpful organization, which in order to stop the new people who are going to be going into the building to allow for more fundraising, not to be traumatized by the sight of these folks using drugs and living in squalor on the sidewalk, and they're going to cut off more services to them so that their squalor may be, should we say, with police assistance, i.e. force, moved somewhere else. Anyway, MH Can was an alternative for 50 people a day to have some kind of respite. They had to have mental health labels to get in there, I guess. But still, that was originally a client-run kind of alternative to getting doped up and thrown out and then getting doped up again at the mental health facilities. Or being these days, more you, they don't dope you up so much forcibly as they send you to other counties to get doped up or otherwise so-called treated for your mental health condition, you know. If I sound sarcastic, it's because I intend to be. I think it's horseshit. But MH Can has the people who were using MH Can met at different points in the last month or two trying to find a way to get MH Can going again. If we ever get permission to play any of the audio I did at those meetings, I will. But so far, I have not. And there has been no clear movement, as you heard from Keith McHenry earlier, who has been in closer touch, I guess, I assume, with Alicia Kuhl. She and Keith have been trying to get together a new board of directors, not that they're in any way involved with that board themselves. They just want to make sure it stays out of the hands of people first, which hasn't been doing too well with the treatment of people up at the Armory. I call them people someday. That's my new phrase to describe them. So I went to one of their meetings, and I interviewed someone on the side of the meeting, and therefore I have her permission to play it. In fact, she wanted me to. She's a critic of how MH Can was being run. I don't think I agree with her in many of the things she had to say, but I'm going to play her anyway. I'd like to apologize, by the way, for the volume differential in this whole audio show today, because it's, I imagine it could be distracting and disarming. You have to keep changing your own volume. I'm having trouble with the equipment. That's the reason this is happening. And I don't anticipate there's going to be necessarily any improvement in the future, but I'll keep trying. Anyway, here is an interview I did a month or two ago now, I think almost, with a former MH Can supporter, and possibly, I think she was also a client at one point, and her perception as to what should be the new MH Can and what the problems were from her perspective with the old one. Hey, well, it's about 10 to 5 on March 1st, 2026. I'm at the parking lot of the MH Can, formerly the MH Can parking lot. Maybe it will be a future MH Can parking lot. And I'm talking with
Marinda Heath Kelly.
And Marinda, you've come to this meeting to become a member of the board of directors. Is that right?
Actually, I'm here in protest. I just want to make sure that we start off correctly this time.
What do you think would be best learned from you're a former MH Can member?
I'm not only a former MH Can participant, but I was also a former staff member. I am currently a houseless person. I ended up on the streets because my mother has Lewy bodies dementia, not because of drug addiction or mental illness, although both of those things are forthcoming.
What about bad financial management? You didn't think about that.
So my own bad financial management. I always start with myself and blame myself. I'm here for my own...
Overspending on expensive hats, perhaps.
It was a gift, my friend, a gift.
All right.
It's a world of trade these days, if you want to make it. But
you've been involved with MH Camp?
4 years, I would say. Four years or so. Just after I was here while Sarah was running the ship and during her closure of that and through the new
Tyler regime.
Yeah, the Tyler Starkman debacle, shall we say. Dear bless his heart. But I was present and with my high-tech corporate background experience, it was difficult to be a staff member here and to see the oversight. I'm here to make sure that the vulnerable are not victimized, because that is basically what's happening if you are renting something that is proposing to be a service to the destitute and the despondent and not providing them with a basic health and safe environment. And that was not the case before. It was a free-for-fucking-all.
And was this the case throughout the 4 years you were here, or at only certain times, or under certain management? Or tell me a bit more about that.
I can't speak for everybody else's experience, although I am a person who's experienced people's testament to their experience. That's what peer run is. I can say that as a woman, this place was where they used the computers to stalk me. I was drugged and raped at the parking lot across the street, and I had to basically work with the people that had this nasty little smirks on their face like they had seen me in my most vulnerable. I believe that this was a place where thieves came to prey on mentally ill people who were offered this as a comfortable place to be. I've seen people slice their own penises on the couch and have nobody wipe it up. This is a place where they did sex acts in the bathrooms and then didn't clean up after, would there be feces and blood on the wall. This is not okay, and you can't provide that as a service to people. It's not safe and it's not humane.
Now, is this, would you say, your average experience on walking in? I should say, how many times a week did you usually visit the place here or work as a staff person?
There was a point in time when the kitchen was accessible to cook where I was coming here daily.
How was that?
The kitchen was a disgusting mess. It was very difficult to stomach that. But as my only option, I often had to make sacrifices that were really not okay. When I became a staff member, I took my responsibility seriously, and I didn't just advise women on the side. I actually
spoke out loudly.
I actually wrote, letters and told Tyler Starkman we can't have it open in its state. So we did get some people, and they came in and they cleaned the place up. And God bless them; they did a wonderful job. But apparently, we went over our budget by having them, and I just don't believe there's a really sensible understanding of basic business practices that have happened. I'm concerned that it's going to proliferate and it's going to continue. Something about the whole concept of peer-to-peer seems to give people permission to just have it lackadaisical, and this is really a dangerous prospect.
How did you find the management of Sarah Leonard?
Sarah Leonard was very not interested in working with me. I found her to be a barrier to any kind of actual formal relationship supporting MH Can ideals. I very much believe in the mission, and I don't believe she was interested in women employed there. I found her to be very abrasive. On the other hand, I know that she worked tirelessly, and everyone seemed to have a very high regard for her. I think I just caught it. The laurels, as they were cast off, she was done. She was cooked, and she was ready to go. And so she did what she could, and I give her kudos for that. But I believe that it's so imperative out here. Like I said, when you're vulnerable, it's even more crucial that the ideals are met and exceeded, not met and failed time and time and time again. What you're doing is you're victimizing the vulnerable.
So if you were to look back over your 4 years, did anything stand out in a positive way?
Well, I believe that the community coming in and continually supporting it, it speaks to the actual need. I believe that the ideal is one of the most beautiful that I've ever put my own actions to. I don't know that it's possible in this day and age to meet those ideals, but a peer-run situation for mentally ill people may not be the best idea. I believe that there should be peer support, but that it should not be run by peers. It needs to be run by business professionals who can understand the politics and the safeguards of business, basic business, in the sense that it will help it to withstand and be sustained in the future. Because we're looking at politics that are completely against those ideals. They are out to squash and smother and kill and decimate any kind of public program that will actually help people.
You're not attacking our Führer, are you?
They're all shills. I don't know who you're speaking to, but they don't.
Talking about, well, Trump, Newsom, and people like that.
I have never seen any of those people as having any authority over me or my people. I don't recognize.
Some sort of anarchistic person?
I just don't recognize them. I'm native. I'm indigenous. I was born and raised here. I don't understand those people. And when I get overwhelmed, I make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for my brethren.
Peanut butter and honey, myself.
That's an expensive taste you have there.
I actually have a jar that now mixes honey and peanut butter.
I've
Skippy's.
Seen that, but I like to mix my own, thank you.
I see. A little bit cautious, perhaps?
Overly so. It's complex PTSD that I have acquired.
When you first came to MMHCAN, why did you first show up here? What was your reason for showing, and what was your initial experience?
Like I said, I like to eat my food cooked over a good fire, and it's incredibly illegal to do that in most places. So rather than cook at a park on a barbecue, I chose here. I found out about this place with showers, and I needed shoes. And I was coming out of a domestic violence situation after my mom got put by Adult Protective Services into an acute skilled nursing facility. I was here to recover, and these were my people, and they understood me, and they didn't make me feel judged. They didn't force medication, and I could just have a minute to feel home.
I'm Robert.
Robert, my name's Holly. Hi.
Hi, I'm Mirinda. I'm being interviewed. Thank you.
So, did you initially spend a lot of time here? Did you come in occasionally to use services and meet people? Let's say, on an average week, how much time did you spend here?
So before I ever became a staff member, and that was in the latter part of my experience, I was coming here pretty much every day and taking it to the streets as well. One time I was at the clock tower talking with a person that I knew here from MHCAN here, and he was having a really bad episode and freaking out, and the police came, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I know him from MHCAN, I'm just talking to him right now, he's having a hard time. And he was like, the policeman was like treating me with honor and respect. He was like, thank you for what you're doing, and let me leave you to it, you know. So there's a lot of pride to have, be in service as a person, which I am. I was born to be in service, and to be able to be in service is really great. That means industry, and to have a positive feedback like that, I was very proud of that. Unfortunately, there were times when I saw things that made me not proud, and I believe that I didn't have the experience people who've been coming here for 10, 15 years have had. I was relatively new. Howdy.
And this woman who's introduced herself twice to me, three times, and you are...
Mirinda. Like Marin County.
Right.
Yeah. So Robert, I want to say that I'm here as a friend to MHCAN and in a friend in the truest sense that I hope to see it, the ideal, succeed. I believe that this church was bequeathed with a certain mission. I believe that mission can be met and this property can be something that will provide a service to the community. My prayers and my best hopes are here in my presence to do that. I want to just do what I can that I can.
And we have been speaking with?
Again, my name is Marinda Heath Kelly.
For those who have short-term memory problems.
I appreciate you chatting with me today and supporting
any objection to my playing this on my archive on the free radio stream?
I have absolute... I would be honored if you were to do so. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what you say when you met me. You foolish woman, you.
Not at all. Time does tell.
Well, have you paid much attention to homeless activism in the last 4 years or so? Have you been involved in anything there?
I have not formally been involved because some of the walks and rallies that I've become aware of were actually, when you looked and did the research, run by those that are actually against it. So I'm more of a grassroots kind of girl. I was conceived at Woodstock, and my mother was a hippie here. She was sent here by the church to go to nursing school, quote unquote. She did finally become a nurse, but basically this was where they sent wayward girls. And as a child of a wayward girl, I do remember a time when people got together in a communal way and they talked about things that were essential, important, and in small ways we did what we could to change them. I'm not saying speaking out loud and wearing t-shirts is going to do anything. I really don't think it will. I believe just being involved in your community and saying, hey, you know, this could be done better. That's maybe a better way. So what we're going
to do... How have the police treated you as a person? Often you're living outside a lot.
I am. I would say initially the police treated me with kindness and care. They were protecting me from a very bad man. Now, that stopped, and I also found the police... they liked it that I fit certain categories on their little boxes that they have to tick on their papers. And so I've never really been challenging to the police. I make it a point to be a listener. And
this is Alicia, by the way.
Hi, Alicia. Hi. I'm Marinda.
Nice to meet you.
You as well. And I try not to be trouble. I'm, what do you call that? I try to just be pleasant. So, but I have... had some instances of the police not really doing their full extent of their job. I do see the police to be, if you're above reproach of the law, then you don't have a problem. But I see that a lot of people are skirting that. That's their right. And they also have to understand that's the risk that they take. So I believe that what we're stepping into, though, is something altogether different, and my concerns are great. This is a smart city. It's going to be one of the first in the nation, and that means that the police are no longer interested in filing those reports. They're not interested in ticking those boxes because they're letting their computers and their video cameras do the police work. People are going to court and being charged with things they didn't know they... there's no due process because they're catching things on video.
We call it doo-doo process.
The doo-doo that they do so well. and so this dehumanizing of things and this shift in what the rules are very frightening because as a person who's had my cell phone stolen from me, pretty much repetitively, I would say every 6 months or so, I get a cell phone for free from the government, and it's stolen from me within a month. And it is used up by the people on the streets who steal it from me. And they could put my cell phone in the middle of a crime, and now I could be prosecuted for that. It's very scary because there's no contending that in court. You are digitally marked, and I don't think people are aware of that.
have you been ticketed for sleeping outside?
I have been ticketed for trespassing, which I was just making my way through this property. Mind you, I stopped and I was looking at the moon.
Looking at the moon without a permit.
I was looking at the moon, and I will admit I was standing on a like a shed.
Dallying, in other words.
I was.
Where you didn't belong.
It's true.
How could you do such a thing?
I don't really recognize all that. I don't. If I were to make some sort of damage, I would make reparations. But that's just me. And I understand not everybody is like that. So there has to be laws.
And we've been talking with again.
Mirinda. And I'm very much a hippie, child of hippies. And so.
Thank you, Mirinda, for your patience. I'm going to turn over to this group here and see what we're up to.
It's very important. Thanks for talking to me.
No, no, I'll be, and I'll let you, do you have a phone? Do you have...
I'm at the RCC, and I there's a general number. You can call there and ask for me.
I'll give you my card in case...
That would be nice. I can...
Leave a message and tell me how to reach you. And
perfect.
I'll let you know when to... This is going on probably next Sunday.
All righty. And nonetheless, I'll go to the library and I'll listen up, as I do.
Oh, well, at least I have one person who's listening. Thank
for
you
sure.
Much.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We sang for a name. On a January day, shot down in Minneapolis, federal agents wouldn't say. Why a woman in her Honda had to die that way? We lit our candles, raised our voices to the winter air, said not one more, Lord, not one more. To heal. Now it's gone and they won't let us see what's real. Phone in one hand filming what was going down. Reached out to help a woman they'd shoved to the ground. They pepper sprayed her, slew into the street. Shot him while he was pinned beneath their feet.
And that was Not One More by the Midnight Republic, and is still on YouTube, so you can still see and, well, sights of the actual killings of these two people. And also, of course, things haven't really changed that much, though Nome has been fired by the Fuhrer Trump, as I call him. The same policies are continuing, and... they weren't, of course, as obvious under Biden, but they were still there. And there's no indication of a change of the policy under Trump. Here's a story from Reuters, dated March 14th by Brad, oh dear, Brad Brooks. And it reads as follows. Few federal agents are seen on the streets of Minneapolis these days. While many of the city's residents still wear red whistles around their necks, used to sound an alert if they spot U.S. immigration agents,
there has been little need to raise the alarm lately. Although parents dutifully patrol the perimeters of school grounds for ICE agents, sightings are rare, hopefully shootings even rarer. The network of observers who follow ICE agents remains active, but on a far smaller scale than before. Now, raids targeting undocumented migrants are mostly occurring in communities outside of the city. Once scenes of turmoil as immigration agents carried out aggressive sweeps under Fuhrer Donald Trump's, Fuhrer is my term, immigration crackdown, the streets of Minneapolis of today settled back into a more familiar rhythm. But everyone from Mayor Jacob Frey to teachers, doctors, lawyers, activists, and immigrants who live and work in the city says the relative calm belies the lasting damage caused by Operation Metro Surge. Starting in December and running through February, about 3,000 immigration agents fanned out across the area. I said its immigration sweeps resulted in roughly 4,000 arrests. The full-throttle attack that we experienced with Operation Metro Surge was not limited just to ICE agents, Frey said, estimating 400 federal immigration officers remain in the city, more than double the normal level. We're seeing other forms of attack. Frey, a Democrat, ticked through them. Kids with cancer who can't get treatment because their families won't leave their homes. Medicaid and Medicare transfers halted by the Trump regime. And federal grants that fund shelters and affordable housing slashed or made contingent on cooperating with immigration enforcement. Over 24 residents who spoke with Reuters described a city trying to recover. Some are struggling to pay their rent or buy food because they have lost their jobs or remain too fearful to leave their homes. Many described a collective feeling of trauma. The right thing. It's unclear how many arrests have been made in the months since Border Czar Tom Homan announced the drawdown of an operation that resulted in agents fatally shooting two American citizens, Rene Good and Alex Pretty. The Department of Homeland Security did not respond to requests for comment. When asked about the status of immigration enforcement in Minneapolis, a White House spokeswoman pointed to cooperation that did not exist before between local officials and the federal government, but did not provide details. But when they open their mouth, it is said, you know they are lying. That's my comment. Frey said the economic damage linked to the immigration operation in January alone totals $203 million. Some 76,000 residents whom he said were too afraid to go to work or whose workplaces shut down need rental assistance. People were killed. Families were torn apart. Businesses were closed, said Frey, adding that he wants the federal government to pay the bill for the damage it inflicted. I'm not holding my breath, but it's the right thing for them to step up and correct some of the damage that they caused, he said. Frey hasn't spoken with anyone with the Trump administration in weeks, he said. Doctors treating in the dark. For Dr. Lane Miller, an oncologist at Children's Minnesota, a prominent pediatric hospital system, the surge's toll on his patients continues to be, quote, catastrophic. He cited 50% no-show rates for appointments for children with conditions like sickle cell disease or active cancer. They are still paralyzed with fear, Miller said of immigrant families. We're not seeing any improvement in our clinic as far as those families feeling comfortable coming here. We're just living in the dark here with a lot of these patients, Miller said. Miller said there was no shortage of alarming examples. He pointed to the case of a 14-year-old boy with leukemia whose father, his primary caregiver, was detained by ICE 5 weeks ago. When the boy finally came in, blood work showed he had stopped taking his medication. The distant family members staying with the boy did not understand his medical regimen or ensure that he was taking his medicine. Even single doses that are missed 2 years into therapy can increase your risk of relapse, Miller said, and a relapse is much harder to treat. The kids who didn't come back. Brenda Lewis is superintendent of Fridley Public Schools, a district of about 2,800 students, where 80% of the kids are from immigrant or minority families. She is now staring at a $1 million budget hole that she blames on the surge. Nearly 100 of her students have vanished, Some moved to districts not targeted by ICE. Some were deported with their families. And many simply she cannot account for. Since Minnesota funds schools based on enrollment, each missing child represents $10,000 in lost funding. The district has also lost $130,000 in nutrition funding since December. Lewis's district has sued the Trump regime, seeking to restore a rule making schools immigration safe havens. She's now an in-demand resource for superintendents from across the nation who call her for fears of an immigration crackdown. None of this is something that we trained for as educators, and it feels like there is no end date to this, to these new challenges we face, Lewis said. From whistles to cash drops. In the Phillips neighborhood of Minneapolis, home to a high concentration of immigrants, the visible crisis of January and February has given way to something quieter but still urgent. Alexandria Gomez, a substitute teacher who lives in Phillips, launched a rent relief GoFundMe for her neighbors that has raised over $730,000 since January. She delivers cash personally to families who don't trust anyone else to bring it. A woman she visits was finally thinking about returning to work when she spotted ICE outside her building and retreated back to her apartment. Gomez, 37, fears another surge in spring or summer. She cites scores of SUVs with blacked-out windows, the type used on immigration raids, recently delivered on car haulers to the building ICE agents use as a staging ground. Reuters witnessed the delivery of a half dozen vehicles on Wednesday. Gomez sees some burnout among residents, but she says she remains committed. What this attack has done is create an entire city of people who are now deeply involved in their communities and who stand ready to resist, Gomez said. That's a story by the Reuters News Service, dated the 14th of March, by Brad Brooks. Minneapolis grapples with lingering trauma, economic damage after ICE surge. Now, the reason I read this is kind of twofold. First, it's a foreign news service because you don't seem to read much about what's going on domestically, perhaps because some of the major news services are now funded by Trump supporters who don't want to embarrass their Führer, number one. Number two, it's a foreign news service, so it may give a better perspective. And at least it gives a perspective. Now, admittedly, this doesn't talk about any more shootings, which is good, although there have been, I think, somewhere around a dozen people shot or wounded by ICE agents in the last 6 months to a year, with no repercussions among the ICE agency, changes in policy, accountability for the shooters, and so forth, or those who damaged or wounded them. I think it wasn't just shooting. It was also conditions in the detention centers that produced some of the deaths or injuries. And here's sort of as a final bit of contemporary news or review of news that happened relatively recently. Here's an interview that happened on Friday at this really small protest, but one that went on for some minutes. I went on for about an hour on Friday afternoon, 4:30 to 5:30 or 6 or so thereabouts. And there was some tabling, there was literature, there were signs posted. And I guess most encouraging of all, there was a lot of honks from passersby. Not as many as at the larger protests, for sure, no question about that, but some. And here's a commentary by a man who I will call M. He didn't want his name mentioned, so I'm not mentioning it, but those who know his voice will recognize him and, I don't know, perhaps be warmed by what he has to say. Let's hear that. We're speculating here on the corner myself and an anonymous individual who sometimes gets identified, but we're not going to identify him at the moment. You've noticed in your work over the years that some of the people that you would have expected to be concerned about the shutdown of homeless services and possibly war activity that doesn't really help homeless services might be here, but they're not. And you have noticed a lack of, you were saying, coming together.
Well, the unifying feature is that many of the nonprofit social service agencies want to do good work, but not with anyone else, and they want more of their budget to grow in spite of it weakening the possible improvement in the situation. So we got food pantries all over town. Now, they should lock the door in honor of the capitalist system screwing working class and elderly who are feeding more often than unhoused people at the pantries currently. You know, Holy Cross Pantry has 150 last Sunday. People pull up in cars mostly, you know, and saving on groceries because they can't afford the rent, utilities, other forms of getting screwed by our current system. We've got to affiliate, you know, and
stand together, solidarity, that sort of thing.
Yes, and listen to each other, but do something in solidarity, not just talk about it. And so anyway, that's my dream. When there were civil rights issues that people were willing to hit the streets for in nonviolent ways, you know, you had Jews and Catholics and atheists and hungry people in the streets and demonstrating.
And you do in other countries, I think.
I think that's very true. And, you know, I don't...
Although I don't know.
Here, but anyway, I want to honor today, too. I was saying earlier, a group that met on Cooper and Pacific every Friday. This is Women's History Month. They were the Women in Black. Keeping silence. Now, this goes back years ago, standing up for Palestinian rights in Jerusalem is where the seed was planted, and then it spread around. Unfortunately, it's disappeared in Santa Cruz. But those...
They showed up again today?
Those women...
No, they didn't show up today.
Mostly elderly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of them, Jane Crowley, I'll remember specifically, but many other honorable women have passed away. So what are we waiting for, Robert?
The younger generation. The
younger generation is busy betting on football games. But... No, I have hope.
You were talking about the football, the betting scam that happened after a 2018 Supreme Court decision.
It's true. And pick up Atlantic Magazine this month, but NPR had the author who, strangely enough, was a Mormon forbidden to bet, who was invited by his editor to immerse himself in that world.
And he became an addict.
He did. He's fighting it as we speak, but it was for
a limited. Did he actually say that?
He lost. Yeah, he feels suckered in every time he watches a basketball game with his kids.
He wants to bet.
Exactly. Anyway, the diabolical nature of it is that it's taking headspace because it's easy to bet on your phone in the middle of the night. 12-year-olds are welcome any place across the country to place their bet, and. This is bringing in last year $140 billion just on sports betting in this country.
And it started with, I think you said $5 billion or something?
It started $4 billion. It started $4 billion in 2018, the year the Supreme Court opened the gates. There had been a national ban on betting online. And in any event, that's just a side issue. However, that money and the money that's donated to weapons makers in our country annually would cure all our ills, but we're suicidal. We really, as a culture, in many ways, and we don't really want to.
But don't forget, we're also homicidal.
I noticed that, but driven by defunding mental health resources as well, which I call housing a mental health resource. But in many ways, that should be the priority. Funding of mental health at all levels. The tycoons in the White House, desperately damaged in many ways, without access, evidently, to useful mental health. So, anyway, end of my spiel, but I want to, invite people to honor young people, honor old people, and work on getting us together.
How do you suggest that should be done? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, speaking up, stand up. You go to church, stand up in the middle of the service. Simply say,
"They're bombing people as we speak, gang.
What are we going to do?" You know, you have to, what
have
do they
you
call
tried
it?
That? Maybe hard to do.
Yeah, David Silva did that in my memory of honorable people. And, it's not going to change anything.
Never can tell.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath for magical results. I'm just going to speak my piece as you've allowed me to do, Robert. So thank you.
I'm not so much giving you an opportunity as giving others an opportunity to hear you.
Okay, well, that's,
whoever, if they're listening, of course.
That's their problem. yeah. And listen to good music as well and be inspired. There's we got to be more than delusional and distracted, all right? We can have fun while we're opposing the machine, all right, that oppresses all income levels getting oppressed.
Your favorite source of inspiration is what?
Oh, Smokey Robinson, Otis Redding.
In the last couple of weeks, you mentioned the Atlantic article.
Yeah, the Atlantic article. Well, I was listening to the Fresh Air on NPR, and they brought this guy on. But anyway, there's definite resources that I don't know about, but that nourish mental health, physical health, and empower you simply to get out on the street corner on a Friday. What the hell?
What empowered you to get out here?
Oh.
Today. I mean, did you intend to do this because you'd heard about it through Keith McHenry's, emails?
Well, I remember the Women in Black every Friday on the main shopping street. And that's the other thing. It's not evil to shop, but let's see our priorities. Anyway, it's a whole different subject, but I'll talk to Robert about that later. I invite someone. Here's a radical action. The Downtown Business Association said there's 10 storefronts now. The economy's booming, and downtown Santa Cruz is rising up.
That's what the mayor says, too.
Exactly.
I think.
Last Saturday, I counted 30-plus. Okay.
Well, maybe you're just not counting properly. Did you ever think about that?
Right. So I invite you
back to school with you.
That's right. Double check me because I was never that good in math. But to stop seeing the wasted resources that we have. Oh, no, you can't sleep in that basketball arena. You can't take a shower there. And sure don't take care of your business.
Wee-weeing. Loudon Nelson says no wee-weeing unless you're in a program.
Wee-wee. Okay. Anyway, enough of that, my palaver. So get your own palaver.
You're doing some good palaver, and you want to say for the benefit of the folks who do not know or recognize your voice, just who the hell you are?
Desperately seeking solution. No. Desperately seeking Susan.
We will leave it for another time. Thank you, sir.
Keep up the good work.
In the frozen heart of Minnesota's plain, we watch the winter turn to fire and rain. Voices rising where the snow once lay. Shadows falling in the breaking day. Renee's name whispered in the bitter wind. A life cut short where justice should have stood. And the bells cried out over.
flow.